Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Davis Maddock. Today, I am joined by Liam Murphy, at Chess Liam. You can find him on Twitter there. Eventually, he'll be starting a YouTube channel. And what we are going to be talking about today is the Drafters Fantasy Football format. I've actually been grinding these for the last 2 years, and they have released a huge contest this year. $20 entry fee, the Drafters $1 million NFL Best Ball Championship. It's 55,000 entries, $250,000 first place, much bigger than the contest that they had last year. And you may be saying, why do we need a specific show for this format? Well, it's not the format you're used to. It's not the format they use on UD, DraftKings, in any of the other sites. It is a cumulative scoring format. So the points that you get in week one are just as important as the points you get in week 17. And if you guys want to sign up, there will be a link to sign up in the description of this podcast. Promo code Davis, everybody.
Way to have that up and ready.
gotta do it. I really enjoy the format, so I am glad to be doing a show. I've been telling Hayden and Josh, like, I'm like, we gotta just have something like this. So I really enjoy the cumulative scoring format. And Liam, and you wrote an article, so it's perfect timing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Underdog also has the most regular season points, week 1 through 14. We'll get 1 million. So, you know, studying Drafters knowledge applies there. And then just flat out how to advance also is applicable, where if you score the most points, you're going to advance. So, you know, like studying Drafters with the cumulative scoring, this is my first year playing on Drafters. And, you know, I didn't play the years prior because the prize pool was too small, but this year it's 250K to first. And I think it's likely that the contest will overlay. So if you're looking to get down some action, obviously if the contest doesn't fill, that's good for you as a gambler. So I think it's really interesting. I wrote an article kind of just like, how, you know, what do we do differently here? You know, it to me in the past, like it's kind of a less strategic game, the cumulative points, because you're not thinking through game stacks. You're not thinking through week 17. You're not thinking through all these edges that are
I think it's more strategic, or maybe not more strategic, but your strategy changes and the way you're building your team should change so much that I think the two things, like it's very much worth at least, you know, its own hour long podcast.
Yeah. I mean, so what I was going to say is, like, in the beginning, it seems like it's less strategic because you have to hit the league winners if they exist. Right. And we'll talk about that. Like, so,
yeah,
you know, you cannot miss out on a last year Cooper Kupp or a last year Leonard Fournette if you're going to have the most points. So in that way,
you can't eat a guy who really underwhelms at a high draft cost who then maybe comes back for the playoffs, like Christian McCaffrey, for example. You know, like, let's say this Christian McCaffrey is going like 1 or 2 or 3 sometimes. And let's say, you know, he does get his soft tissue injury and he misses 6 weeks or whatever. So like in a playoff format, that might be fine because he might come back and smash for you. But those teams are like probably really stone dead in this cumulative format.
Yeah, and it's just a totally different strategic thought. And once you start doing these, I've done about actually 50 already on Drafters, just trying to get some early action down. You realize that they're actually like what your picks did previously, you really do have to adapt what you're doing. And I think a lot of people are not drafting optimally. Like they're just stone dead to actually win the whole thing. From the drafts I'm seeing, you know, like they're building strong teams that would be good for Underdog, but I don't think they have a lot of first place equity, just from what I'm seeing in the Drafter street.
So one of my big things, so just as we get into the strategy stuff, my number one big strategy thing is like mega team stacking is so viable because, I mean, one, the weeks that you, that the Patriots score 50 points, that the Bills throw up 48 or whatever. I mean, you're just banking all of that. And those points carry with you the entire way. But then the other thing is you're also really capturing the benefit of a team doing way better than the market anticipates. So for example, 2020, I got third in, which I guess would have been the inaugural Drafters Championship. And I had six of my 20 roster spots were Buffalo Bills, you know, obviously including Josh Allen. I had Dawson Knox. I think I even had Isaiah McKenzie. Like I full onslaughted. And I think that is a super viable way to construct teams in the structure of this game.
That's interesting, because my initial gut reaction is that
stacking is not as important.
Well, I do think stacking's still important, because obviously week to week you could smash, but my gut reaction is that, like, kind of like a skinny stack or a max two players, unless you're getting great values on the team cost, is where you want to go. And I think it's hard for us as players to know, you know, like that contest size, like this year it's 55,000 entrants.
Right.
Like it was probably like 10K entrants back then. It's hard to know how much more optimal of a team you need compared to the field size. So, you know, like if we're talking this year, yes, I do think if you do Patrick Mahomes and all the Chiefs pass catchers, you're totally live for first, because you're going to catch someone and the cost is cheap. But, you know, if you do Herbert and, or like, you know, Burrow and
yeah,
the,
it makes much more sense when the cost is cheap. Yes. 100%, because then you're reaping the rewards of those guys just destroying their cost. Not necessarily the fact that the points are correlated, right? Like Burrow and Chase are not going to destroy their cost. They're just going to be very good. But Daniel Jones and Wandale Robinson might just completely annihilate what they costed.
Yeah. And so my other thoughts are, if there's going to be a player who has like a 50 point week, you're going to need that player to win. And yeah, every player you take, you need to think about in the round, you know, what's the opportunity cost of that player? Is there going to be a league winner in that range, especially with quarterback? So for example, taking like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes on a team, my guess is that you can almost never win first, because you're fading both a third round player and a fourth round player. And you're saying, okay, none of these players are going to be league separators at running back, wide receiver, or tight end, which seems like a bad market cost to me. What's your thoughts on double tapping the elite quarterbacks?
So I think one of the big things with the way I've come to think about elite quarterbacks in the playoff formats is those are going to be unusual teams to advance. Like a very small portion of Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes teams are going to advance. And I mean, because very few people are going to draft that way. And then you are also, you know, you're basically wasting one of those picks most weeks, right? I mean, you are wasting your third round or your fourth round pick in most of those weeks. So my intuition would be, it is not a good strategy in a cumulative scoring format, because you're not even getting the benefit of the uniqueness. The uniqueness doesn't matter. And I also really like the two extra roster spots, because it frees you up to take three quarterbacks and not, you know, lose anything at wide receiver. Sometimes you can even do three quarterbacks, three tight ends, which I pretty much always take three tight ends with the 20-man roster format.
Yeah, I think we should talk about roster construction. I have made some two tight end teams when I've gotten two high-cost guys. Circling back on the quarterback, so Josh Allen was QB1 last year, and he scored 394 points weeks 1 through 17.
That's a lot of points.
That's a lot of points. So nearly 400. If you took someone like Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr, and Carson Wentz, and you just took their max score. So Kirk Cousins was, and Derek Carr were the two, they were quarterback 11 and quarterback 12 last year, and they were cheap. So they were the two like late round quarterback winners to me. And so you got quarterback 11, quarterback 12, and Carson Wentz, who was quarterback 15, right? So you got three serviceable quarterbacks. Those three combined, you know, and Josh Allen had the bye, they scored 350 points. So three quarterbacks are giving away 40 points to a fourth round quarterback. Which is like, you know, it's hard for me to know how much, just being new to drafters, like how much do we care about these 50 points? You know, and obviously you're not, almost never just, you're not going to single stack a quarterback. And then if we look at some of the high cost quarterbacks, if you paired Allen and Brady, you're at nearly 467 points. So that's about, you know, compared to the Cousins, Carr, Wentz, you're beating them by 100 points, which I do think like.
But did you do the math on the distributions of those points though? Like that's what you'd have to get in the nitty gritty of is two quarterbacks who each score, let's say 350, right? Let's get 380. Let's go. Mahomes.
The pairings I'm looking at, like who scored the most week one, who scored the most week two.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And yeah. I'm taking whoever scored, like, so I'm doing the combo of points that you added to your team actually.
Okay.
And then like, you know, if we look at like comparing Allen and Cousins, so that's the quarterback one and quarterback 11 who was cheap, you're at 430 points. So to me, you got Allen and Brady who are like quarterback one and quarterback three. You're only beating Allen and Kirk Cousins by 30 points over the course of the season. So that just points out to me like, double tapping elite quarterback, I have to guess for drafters, is not a winning strategy unless no league winners emerge in the seventh round where Brady's going and, you know, like the second or third round where Allen's going. Like you're not
right.
You're not adding a lot by hitting on two.
And the chances of that are very low, right? Like probably the guy who goes totally nuts in a Cooper Kupp style way that the market is not anticipating will probably be a second, third, fourth round pick, right? You know, AJ Brown, Mike Williams, whatever.
Yeah. And I think I do think there's some late round guys this year who have the potential to be league winners. But I also think when you play fantasy football, you need to think through how has the draft landscape changed from the previous year to this year? Because almost everyone out there is just saying, okay, this is what worked last year and, you know, let's draft this year. But things change. The quarterbacks, like, you know, like the best quarterbacks to take last year were people like Rodgers, Brady, Burrow, and Hurts, who were all like 10th round picks and smashed. This year, those guys are like 7th round picks. Rodgers is still pretty cheap, but, you know, like they're more expensive. And then the other unusual thing I think last year, and I want your opinion on this, is I think the amount of league winners we got who were really cheap,
bizarre,
such as Fournette, James Conner, even Cooper Kupp, Jamar Chase, Mark Andrews, like the amount we got. And then you could like zoom out to some of the other tight ends who were almost like not drafted, Gronk, Schultz, Dawson Knox. I think it was bizarre the amount of late round league winners we got, which, you know, like I'm not, you know, I think the market might be more efficient this year, but what's your take on that?
Well, and also underperformance from some of the studs at the top too, right? That's gotta feed into it as well, because we saw like, you know, Kelsey kind of had an underwhelming season. George Kittle got injured and missed time. Darren Waller was super underwhelming. You know, Derrick Henry got injured for the playoffs. Like there were just lots of guys at the top who were, you're just not good, right? Who just were ended up not, and that is extremely uncommon. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I'm not sure if we're going to see that again. And so like, obviously last year taking a quarterback in round 10 was a bad idea because it meant you weren't taking Leonard Fournette or James Conner. You know, taking Josh Allen even was a bad idea because it means you probably weren't taking Cooper Kupp unless, you know, I don't know. Josh Allen's cost was really different on different sites. And I want to point out that the cost of like quarterbacks is pretty different on a lot of sites.
And you
want to think through, you know, like my intuition is half point PPR. The quarterback is more important, you know, flat bank period. They're going to contribute a higher percentage of points because the other players don't score as much because they don't get a full point for the receptions, just half a point. So quarterback's a little bit less important on drafters than underdog. But yeah, I think it's fascinating to think through the league winners and like, what do we actually want to be doing with quarterback? I do think there's some late round quarterbacks who I'm still making some teams with three or even four late round quarterbacks, just seeing if our volume could compete with the elite guys. But my gut is that we need one elite type guy who can, you know, give us these 25, 30 point weeks, and we pair him with one late round, someone like a Kirk Cousins last year, someone like a Derek Carr last year, but they're different players this year.
Well, you know, the other interesting thing this year is last year, all the rookie quarterbacks were so expensive, right?
And Fields, bad.
Lance, and bad. Whereas this year, I think the market is overreacting to that, where even Pickett, who seems like a pretty strong favorite to play, let's say 10 games, and I would probably even take over that, last round, Ridder, last round, Malik Willis, last round, you know? And there are some teams where the quarterback is like not being drafted at all, right? Like the Panthers situation.
Atlanta
like
a lot.
Atlanta, yeah. So it's like, or what do you like, what do you think about in this format taking both of them, right? So you have the two extra rounds, taking Ridder and Mariota, taking Tannehill and Willis.
So, you know, I think I'm gonna drop this article I wrote. It's like 16 pages on a Substack or something, but in it, I give my five favorite late round quarterbacks. And number two for me actually is the Atlanta quarterback combo. So Marcus Mariota and Ridder, that combo I've done a lot actually. Because if we think back to those pre-draft underdog drafts and where Marcus Mariota was going in those super flex drafts, he was going expensive. Mariota, yeah, and Ridder is going to be a cheap Konami code quarterback. And like, I made the point on Twitter that I like their chances to straight up outscore Justin Fields. You know, if we think through, yeah, the Bears offense and we think through Atlanta's offense, like Atlanta's weapons are way better than what Chicago's rolling out.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Atlanta's going to be like a bad team and this could blow up in my face, but this is the type of quarterback that can give you whatever the rushing production. And I really like them as some upside. Like when I'm doing these four quarterback combos, I am doing that. I'm doing like Mariota and Ridder combined, and then two other cheap pocket passers that I think can hover around quarterback 15 or so, to give me those like 20 point weeks or so.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is fairly reasonable. I just, while we're here, I mean, Daniel Jones is my favorite late round quarterback, not because I think he's good, but because if things break the right way, knowing the skill set that he does have, he could be a top 10 fantasy quarterback. I don't think Ridder or Mariota will average over, you know, even the zombie version of them where you get to count both their points, the Buccaneers, Jameis Fitzpatrick season or whatever. I don't think that either of them would have the ability to do that, just because I don't think the offense will be that good. But the Giants have the bones of an offense that could be really good, because the skill position players are all above average, I guess, other than their tight end situation. But they have a lot of good wide receivers, a good pass catching running back, a quarterback who will run. Obviously, they were pathetic last year because they had like the worst coaching in the NFL. And now they have a really good coach, right?
Yeah, I mean, that the Giants is a tough situation for me, because obviously I want to be in a, you know, like I've drafted Daniel Jones almost every year. He's been pretty cheap though, and he's just kind of like he runs a bit, and hopefully he gets better. B, we like the coaching situation and the weapons they have. I just don't know. I'm just not a believer that like this Josh Allen-esque step can be made by Daniel Jones by just simply applying Brian Daboll. I do think that coaching in the NFL, bad coaches hurt your team a lot more than good coaches help them. And yeah, I think the Giants are getting both. So they had a terrible coach who was really hurting them, and now they have a good coach. So they should be getting, you know, a big positivity there, but I don't know. I'm just not even convinced he's going to start the whole season. Like,
oh, I'm not convinced he's going to start the whole season either. Yeah. No doubt about that.
Yeah, I think he's a smart guy. You should full fading Daniel Jones is not smart. And I have been taking him, but I don't know. There are some like late round players I like to have a chance to be these league winner spike league. So I don't think I'm getting him on a ton of my drafter teams.
Okay.
Currently.
So what is our thought about tight end on drafters then?
I wanted to talk about tight end. I think tight end's real interesting.
My gut assumption would be that unless a tight end, like even Mark Andrews last season, he had the crazy spike weeks, right? So he did spike a ton, but his season ending numbers were good. But I mean, 1,400 yards and 9 touchdowns, very good, but not, well, I don't know. It's like, how much would a 4 tight end tandem of team came close to that? I don't even know. I didn't realize he had 1,400 yards. That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, well, and it's kind of like Mark Andrews is weird because he had a bunch of those spike weeks with not even Lamar.
Yeah.
But so my gut reaction is that if there is an elite tight end that separates, you need them. On the other hand, tight ends don't score. They don't score the most points. So just flat out, you know, you could start there. But, you know, I usually try to get one tight end I think has a chance to be top 5. I've done a lot of 3 tight end teams. I'll do 2 if I take 2 expensive guys. And I have even drafted some 4 tight end teams when I miss out. But, you know, I pulled for the article the highest scoring team for drafters last year and the highest scoring team for underdog.
Yeah.
The team on drafters did have Mark Andrews and a 0 and Chris Herndon. So a nobody.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. 2 tight end team. It was a 2 quarterback, 7 running back, 9 wide receiver, 2 tight end team. So we had the tight end 1 with Andrews and the highest scoring team on underdog, which we'll talk about this later, but it was a much better team than the team on drafters, which makes sense because it's a much bigger field size. But they did not have Mark Andrews. They had Gronk and Hunter Henry. So they had the tight end 10 and the tight end 14 on season scoring, which is not perfect for best ball because obviously all we care about is the spike weeks if they alternate off each other.
Right. Yeah. That is that's pretty interesting though. So I guess our analysis would be that maybe even hero tight end actually makes sense where you're just putting a lot of bets on Kelce, Waller, Kittle, Mark Andrews, and just saying one of these guys better bank. And because really, if you think about it, even the scoring distribution, like, you know, let's say we take Alberto Kuibunam, Irv Smith Jr., Cole Kmet, and like Mo Alie-Cox, like a last round guy, like any given week, all 4 of those guys might score less than 10 points. In fact, probably will quite a lot of the time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So I usually try to get, and it's tough to think about these like Kelce and Andrews, you know, I started the off season and I was like, well, I kind of think Mark Andrews is my tight end 1. I don't think that way anymore. It's just
can't be
the volume Kelce's going to get is just going to be so immense, you know, and even at his age, like how much can he even slow down at tight end? You just like run up the field, turn around and receive the ball from Patrick Mahomes. But I don't know. It's like, I've not built a ton of Kelce or Andrews teams on drafters. Just because I think getting the league winner at running back or locking down one of your 3 wide receiver positions is pretty important. I think I think there's also some interesting late tight ends, like getting a combination of Gronk, I'm just taking Gronk. And if he doesn't return, so be it. I'm taking like, you know, a combination of like Gronk, Akuibuom, and like an Irv Smith, Dawson Knox, something like that. I kind of like those 3 to like, just get the sheer touchdowns, or like a Zach Ertz who should get a ton of volume, especially early in the season. So I don't know. Tight end is one of the positions where I rarely, you know, like I try to have exposure to a lot of guys because it's just who scores the touchdowns. And I think you want to think through what offense they play for, because obviously good offenses score more touchdowns.
Yes. Yeah. Which is, I mean, that goes back to the point that I was making earlier, which is like hitting on an offense that just scores a bunch of touchdowns and the market is not anticipating it. is huge in this format. And I mean, the hyper specific player example of Gronk is interesting because obviously you're getting a big discount on him right now because he, you know, we're not for sure that he's playing. The ADP is starting to creep the other way because now but when Gronk comes back and the Buccaneers account like sends the tweet out like, oh, he's with the team. I mean, how high is he going to go?
So I think he will go just after Dalton Schultz is my guess. So before Goddard, Hockenson, Knox, and just after Schultz is my guess when he returns, because I mean, A, they probably won't even have Godwin to begin. So he's probably the pass catcher target two to begin the season. And, you know, like, I don't think we're going to be getting, you know, a ton of early season work from him, but he could just smash. So I definitely like targeting Gronk a lot at tight end. Should we talk through what these teams did that were the best on Underdog and the best on Drafters last year?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, so we'll start with the Drafters team, which was, again, a smaller field. So they had Joe Burrow and Kirk Cousins. So that's the quarterback 5 and the quarterback 11.
So they got Burrow, who smashed ADP, and Cousins, who is, like, always relatively fine.
Yeah, and also Burrow was not that spiky to begin the season, if I remember correctly, and Kirk Cousins was, and Burrow had all the spike weeks to end the season. So just really a fortunate combo there. And then they skinny stacked both their quarterbacks. So their wide receivers were Cooper Kupp, obviously, Ja'Marr Chase, had to. Michael Thomas, who was a 0, did not play last year. So they ate a 0, expensively too.
Yeah.
Christian Kirk, who was a common thread on all these good teams because he was real cheap and smashed. Donovan Peoples-Jones, who gave...
He had two big spike weeks. He was my most drafted player last year.
Yeah. Sammy Watkins gave us 1 week, I think.
Yeah.
Jalen Waddle, solid.
He has to be a common thread on Drafters because he just so consistently was giving like 18, 19.
Yeah. So just Cup, Chase, Waddle right there. You got your wide receivers. And then he also had Devontae Smith, again, another solid guy, and Jalen Reagor, another 0. So a bunch of like bad wide receiver picks, but he hit on Cup and Chase. You can't really go wrong from there.
I think that really illustrates in this format, like, you just like whoever the answer to last year's Cup and Fournette are, you just got to have them.
Yeah, that's why my initial gut reaction is like, well, it's less strategy because it's like, do you have the league winners, yes or no? But at the same time, thinking through those players is a lot of strategy, and how to adapt your draft depending on the picks you already did to give you a chance to find those league winners is a lot of strategy in itself. The running backs, so they had Jonathan Taylor, running back 1. They had Nick Chubb, who was running back 11 on the season, but had a ton of spike weeks. James Conner, running back 8 on the season, ton of spike weeks. And then they had some guys that gave you some weeks with, like, Boston Scott, Jamal Williams from Detroit. And
Boston Scott scored 6 touchdowns last year, I think.
Yeah, he was like running back 43.
Yeah.
Using PPR scoring, but he had the spike week. So like running back 43 doesn't capture how important he was. And then like some guys that were not important, and Gio Bernard and Samaje Perine. I think Gio Bernard gave like 1 game.
Perine had a couple too.
Yeah. And Perine had a little bit here. They were running. Perine was running back 58. So I guess he was a little bit more important. And then the tight ends we said were Andrews and Herdon. So, you know, looking at this, a ton of misses, right? Michael Thomas, no. Chris Herndon, no, right? Jalen Reagor, no. But you get the league winners, you're going to be fine. And he had like 3 solid running backs and 3 solid, or really 5 solid wide receivers, and then just good enough at quarterback to win this contest. And I did some math here where... So this team averaged 164 PPR points a week over the week 17. But keep in mind, Ja'Marr Chase gave us like a, you know, a bunch of spike weeks, and so did Cooper Kupp. That really makes that average easier. And then if we remove the 402 quarterback points from the total points this team scored, which the total points this team scored, I should point out, was 2,786. But our non-quarterback positions averaged 140 weekly points, including tight end. So yeah. that kind of, which comes down to 20 points a game. So your two running backs, your three wide receivers, your flex and your tight end, they were contributing 20 point PPR points a game. And I think having these like top down numbers is kind of cool to just keep in your mind, because once you draft your team and you finish it, you should just look at it and think like, how does this team get to 160 points? Like who do I need to score what, a week?
Yeah. And so that, I guess from that top level, that did make it seem like the later round quarterback stuff makes more sense for two reasons. You know, the first reason being the league winner is so unlikely to be a quarterback, because the market,
it can't be, it just can't be.
So it could have been in the past.
Yeah.
Well, so the market has gotten much better at this, but for example, Lamar Jackson, the year he won MVP, I believe he was the quarterback 11, and yeah, he was going after out of the top 100 picks, and he scored, I don't remember, something like 60 more points than everyone else that year. But any player that had, even so, like Hurts would be the obvious analogy to that, like a guy who's shown very little in terms of winning NFL games but can rack up fantasy points. I mean, you just have to pay for that, right? Like Hurts is the quarterback 7-6 right now, kind of. I think it kind of flip-flops depending on the day. And he, like, you got to take him in the sixth round if you want him. So I just think the idea of the quarterback being the league winner is likely not happening on this format.
You're not going to get the league winner at quarterback, but at the same time, you can't give up 100 points to some of the other teams. So Mike, like, you need to have one elite-esque quarterback. And, yeah. And talking about quarterback before we talk about the underdog team, you know, obviously Lamar and Kyler Murray were injured last year. So that obviously made players like Brady, Rodgers, Burrow.
That's a good point too. Yeah.
You know, so like if Murray kept on averaging 30 points a game, my guess is we may have seen some Murray teams. But I don't think it's just real hard to take, you know, Allen and Brady, which I've done on some teams, or like Mahomes and Lamar, and be the optimal highest scoring team you can have.
Yes.
Unless we find a ton of late league winners again, which there are some candidates just because of market uncertainty this year, like the Green Bay guys, the Chief guys, et cetera there.
So while we're thinking about this, one of the things that seems sort of interesting would be what archetype of running backs are we looking for the back end of our roster? Right. So I think like we've in these playoff formats, a lot of us have kind of disregarded the Nyheim Hines, James White, Giovanni Bernard style of guy who has no chance of being a 20 touch a game guy. Right. Like nine running backs ahead of Nyheim Hines could get injured and they would sign, you know, Isaiah Crowell off the street or whatever to be the between the tackles runner. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where I can see it both ways. Like, I don't know, is it worth it to have a guy who's going to chip in nine every once in a while, or do I want to fill the back end of mine with exclusive league winners? Regardless of the format, I think that's a hard question to answer. Well, best ball format and managed formats, I'm going to have shit tons of James White, Nyheim Hines style guys because my teams are always bad at running back and I always need that.
Interesting. I thought on managed, you might say you just hit the, you try to target the league winners because.
No. So
you don't
managed,
have to play them.
Managed is, so you cycle through guys like that in managed, right? You draft Tyrion Davis Price and you cut him and you pick up Jordan Wilkins and you cut him and you pick up Derek Orr and you cut him. But you'll always, while you're trying to find the next guy, while you're trying to find
James White's a starter.
You got to have James White. You got to have Naheem Hines, or you're getting no points.
Yeah, and I think we should talk about, is zero running back viable with this running back discussion? Because I think what you do with your running backs depends how, you know, what you've done with your previous picks. So I am taking players like Hines and James White just because, whatever, if James White gives me 12 points and another team is getting 25 points, okay, I'm giving up 13 points to the field, but maybe my wide receiver combination is giving me more than that. So I do kind of like a mix of these handcuffs with the idea that, well, the handcuffs may come down late and maybe Hines, James White, whatever is like piecing me by to get there. But, you know, like, you know, I think these PPR for PPR scoring, these pass catcher guys, they can spike. Like James White, before he went down last year, he was getting something like 6 targets a game from Mac Jones. And I don't know. I don't know if he's going to do that again. I wasn't taking any, and now I'm taking him specifically kind of late because, you know, I like, everyone's like, oh, the Patriots backfield's so uncertain. Who cares for best ball?
Just
throw one on the team and hope it's them. I don't know.
I'm gobbling Ramondre up in every format right now.
I like Ramondre a lot. And last year I had like 26% Ramondre on underdog just because I was a flat out believer in the player. And I'm taking him again this year, but I don't know if he misses one pass block week one, we may not see him for 3 weeks.
But that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. No.
You don't want that. You don't want that on drafters. We would probably be discounting guys like that, who have so much competition and so much uncertainty. Like I might say, Chase Edmonds is slightly better than Ramondre in this format because Chase Edmonds does have a ceiling, and is all like. Worst case scenario, Chase Edmonds is Miami Dolphins, James White, right? But best case scenario, he's getting 13 carries and 5.5 targets a game and is getting goal line work. So like he can also explode.
Yeah, the Miami backfield's hard to think through too, because there's a lot of guys there that are pretty good at football that we've seen. But yeah, so to answer your question, I'm doing a lot with running back. I've built some zero running back teams. Just because it hasn't worked in the past doesn't mean it can't work again. But I think if you're going to be doing that, you need to like stop at a certain amount of wide receivers and go volume at the other positions. Like don't start with 6 wide receivers and then have 9 total on your team. You're just diminishing returns there. Let's talk about the underdog winner. So this team was monstrous. It scored with half point PPR scoring. Keep in mind.
Yeah. Do we know anything about the guy that drafted this team?
I don't know who it was. I just know was it you or something?
Yeah. Monster team. Only a genius could have drafted this team. I think.
Did you draft this team?
No. I thought, are we not talking about your best ball mania 2 team?
Oh no, sorry. I'm talking about the highest, the week 1 through 14, the highest scoring underdog team.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Right. So applying it to the drafters' logic of who scored the most points.
Okay.
No, but the winner must have been a genius, whoever won the actual contest.
Right. Right.
So it scored with half point PPR, it scored 2,226 points, which comes to an average score of 159 points a week for 14 weeks. If we remove the 3 quarterbacks, we come to the non-quarterback positions contributing 131 points, dividing this by the 7 positions, mean through their 2 running backs, their 3 wide receivers, their flex and their tight end, we're averaging 19 points a game, each of them. And the team is at quarterback. They had Herbert, Stafford, and Daniel Jones. So they had quarterback 3, quarterback 4, and quarterback 23. I did take a look, you know, because to me, if I'm doing a Herbert Stafford team, I'm not drafting Daniel Jones. And I took a look, what happens if this team did not have Daniel Jones?
Yeah.
And it contributed like something very minute, 1 point per game. So is the third quarterback worth the 1 point per game that you got? You know, no. To me, no. Like, you're too risky. But then this team went to just smash everywhere else. So it had Jonathan Taylor, Nick Chubb, Leonard Fournette, James Conner, Devin Singletary, Kenneth Gainwell. All really good contributing running backs, including the league winners in Fournette, James Conner, Jonathan Taylor. Again, Nick Chubb gave the spike points or the spike weeks. Wide receivers, again, just smashed it out the park. Cooper Kupp, Mike Evans, Marquise Brown, Deebo Samuel, Christian Kirk, Kadarius Toney, and Paris Campbell. So Campbell was a miss. Toney was electric, but got hurt for most of the season.
Got hurt, yeah.
But then, you know, if you have Deebo, Kupp, Mike Evans, Marquise Brown, Christian Kirk, you're fine there. And then the tight ends were Gronk and Hunter Henry. So didn't have Mark Andrews, but smashed it out with two really usable, like Hunter Henry had 9 touchdowns last year.
Right.
You know, incredibly important for the half point PPR. And then Gronk was obviously Gronk. So I don't know if there's a lot of takeaways from these.
I mean, it seems like the takeaways are just draft the best players.
So you have to have the league winners. So, but you know, knowing that, think through where can these league winners emerge? Look at the rounds, think, okay, who's likely to be a league winner in this cost? Especially early in the season, I recommend leading into uncertainty. So there's a lot of uncertain players who could smash. People like Gronk, people like Will Fuller, our king. Those are my takeaways from that. Anything else from you on the underdog team here?
No, I mean, I think for the cumulative scoring format, I mean, I just think in general, you need to be thinking with most of your selections, does this guy have the insane smash in his range of outcomes? Like, what has to go right for every individual player? And discounting guys, you know, who just kind of chug along, you know, your Jarvis Landry types. And, you know, we hadn't got to this point yet, but a lot of the reason in the playoff formats why people are so interested in the rookies is because they tend to increase their scoring in the second half of the year. And that's really valuable in a playoff format. But someone like David Bell or George Pickens or Jameson Williams, for example, is like a bad pick at cost in these drafts, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think he might play pretty soon, actually. So I'm not real sure.
There's just a report today. He's not going to be ready for training camp.
Well, okay, but if he misses 3 games, that's not a big deal. Like, I think at wide receiver, if you have
9 or whatever,
and if you have 3 strong guys, like if you start Kupp, Deebo, and Keenan Allen,
sure,
take whoever you want, but you're kind of banking on those 3 to be in the lineup each week. Let's talk about the roster constructions you've been building on drafters, and if you think something like a 0 running back can work.
It can, but I think it's actually harder because you are not going to be able to stomach the weeks where you are only getting like 9 points out of your RB1 or whatever. Like, it's so much harder to overcome. Whereas like in the playoff scoring or whatever, as long as your team, I had teams on underdog advancing with like 0s at running back 2 last year, you know, and that's just, it's not going to work in the cumulative scoring because you're going to lag behind. So Nick Chubb is a great example, just not really interested in him. Even though the scoring system on half point PPR is better for him, he just has like, what would have to happen for Nick Chubb to be like, I don't know. He'd have to score like 2 long touchdowns, which he has done before in his career. But I'm more interested in just churning out 22 carries to 1 catch a week type performances that he's going to be giving on drafters.
Yeah. I think, so you're saying you don't like Nick Chubb on playoff formats like underdog, or you don't like him on drafters format?
I don't like him. I don't like him as much in the playoff formats. Yeah.
I think he's a, totally fine for playoff formats, because the way I kind of think about players is, especially for the playoff formats, even more so, you don't need the league winner. You just need the player that spikes
the playoffs. Yeah.
And Nick Chubb spikes. So
yeah, maybe I'm thinking about it. Maybe I'm thinking about it in reverse, because I don't think Nick Chubb has the game winner or the league winner in his range, really, unless Kareem Hunt gets injured. And even then, they'll still probably play Dearness Johnson.
I agree with you there that it's like he's drawing very thin to be top three at the position, top five. But if he gives us 5 30-point weeks and we hit on some other late round guys, I mean, we just saw both these teams had Nick Chubb on it, and he had like a good but not great season last year.
Yeah, but he just is going to get to 12 like every week, basically.
Yeah, he's probably not the player, like, just because who's going around him and like the upside of those players, he doesn't really have the same upside, I think, but I'm not totally Xing him out on drafters. Answering the question about zero running back, I've built some zero running back teams where I start with like six wide receivers, but I stop at six then. So I'm just like, okay, these guys, I'm really counting on them. Like, give me 120 points a week between these six. So the three wide receiver positions and the flex, like, which obviously is not going to happen, right? But whatever, on average, hope that you get some 50-point weeks from some of them.
Right.
And then just go real volume at running back. So something like six wide receivers, double, you know, hit quarterback, hit tight end, stop at two each. So that's 10. And then just draft 10 running backs and pray you get an injury to one of the top guys where you have a handcuff, and mix in some Nyheim Hines, James White's. I think the chalk to be good is either hero running back starting with two, or just starting with one running back, elite running back in the first two rounds, and then adding on some positions. But I'm doing everything with roster construction. I do think zero running back is viable, but it's obviously harder to see the path.
One of the things I've been wondering as we're going through this is, like, there seems like more avenues for weird roster construction being good on drafters than it is on Underdog, where your requirements are so specific, right? Like I would never build a team with five wide receivers on Underdog, but I could maybe see myself, like, if I truly started with like three stud wide receivers, a running back, and then took, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster in the fifth or whatever. Like I could see five or six wide receivers being something I would do on drafters.
I do the weird roster construction on both sites. Last year I saw some, you know, in the playoffs, I would look through those brackets. Like, I saw some weird teams like that on Underdog, where it was like five wide receivers. It was like Mike Evans, Cooper Kupp, and then three other whatever. And so, like, yeah, of course they were fine with five. But, you know, and obviously you're getting different like that, you know, it's not what I do often, but I'll sprinkle in some weird, like, I have some five quarterback teams on drafters where it's just like, okay, I feel real good about running back, wide receiver, tight end. Let's just see if five can piecemeal a 400 points together. And they probably won't, it's probably dead, but,
I gotta think that's bad, but I could see five tight ends. Because I've
done that too.
Because you're at least able to get those scores in flex.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that idea, but I think I would rather have like a Darren Waller, Dalton Schultz plus five quarterbacks than two quarterbacks that go in those rounds plus five tight, like late, like the last five rounds of tight ends. But it really, like the like on Underdog, tight ends go real late, and on drafters, they don't. I want to point out that I do think drafters rankings are sharp.
Interesting.
Maybe the sharpest I've seen is, I mean, it could be that, like, I did some shows with you, some shows with Eric earlier, and I just kind of like talked about some guys I liked, and then all those guys got expensive. But the way I'm looking at drafters,
I don't know if you're moving the market that much yet.
Yeah, buddy. I don't think I am, but like there's like one or two guys. The reason why I think I could be though is because it's the same 12 people on drafters right now, always. And I know like eight of those dudes follow me on Twitter and interact with my tweets. So they're
Well, I hope by doing the show, we have more people signed up and in and ready to grind. That is my hope, is that people are taking this as a call to action.
Well, and like, no one person is the sharpest. So obviously, if you think different than other people, you might look at drafters rankings and be like, this is terrible. But I personally think it's the sharpest I've seen right now. It could be because it's literally like the same 20 people swapping these drafts back and forth at the moment. But I don't know. That's just my take, especially with like the wide receivers rankings on that site. I think it's pretty tight right now.
Yeah. Anything else that we really wanted to get into as it pertains to drafters?
I don't know. I think it's just real fascinating to think through, how do I score the most points? I've obviously given it some thought. I'm new to like, really, like when I build my underdog teams in the past, I straight up don't think about that. Like, I'm not like, oh, how do I advance this team? I'm like, okay, how do I win in week 17?
Oh, so, I did think of something actually, which is that you really want to try and space your bye weeks out, I think.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, that was like, so like, you know, having overlapping bye weeks or whatever in the cumulative format is not good. It's not optimal. It's not what you want. But even more than that, I wondered if there's like this extra layer of like figuring out like, oh, you know, so I took Josh Allen and I took Gabriel Davis. So like, what are the good matchups the week the Bills are on by? Like that's something that like maybe like an AI, like you did that Twitter thread the other day about AI simming out best ball seasons or whatever. But that's another wrinkle that I thought of.
Yeah, I think the AI discussion is real fascinating, but the, yeah, like thinking of your bye weeks is real important. Going back to your example of stopping at five wide receivers, I would probably only do that if each had a different bye week, and I drafted five to begin. But I, you know, it's a real interesting format, thinking through how to score the most points. How about we should we end this with each like taking a stab at some players at each position we think will be on the winning drafters team?
Yes.
Okay, quarterback, you go first. So we're just going to say one player each position.
Daniel Jones.
Okay, interesting. I'm going to go with Trey Lance.
Yeah, that's interesting. I obviously have no feedback on that. The wrinkle I could see is in drafters taking Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance.
I'm not doing that. Jimmy G's gone.
Jimmy G's gone. All right. Running back.
Okay, I'll go first. Give me. Oof. Should we say, should we think about cheap guys or expensive guys here? Because, you know, just saying that
mine is a cheap guy.
Okay, I'll go with a cheap guy too then, because it's like, okay, just saying Christian McCaffrey is not exciting. Cheap guy, I'm going to say Cordarrelle Patterson. Especially because who cares if he only plays 8 weeks, if he gives us like 7 20 point weeks.
Yeah, if he's got 180 points by the time he likes to slow, by the time he's ready to slow down or whatever, because he's 31, that's all fine, cost adjusted. Mine is Tyrion Davis Price for sure. That's true in any format, but I think he's like coin flipping to get Eli Mitchell's workload. You know, that's just the nature of the Shanahan beast.
I've drafted a lot of him. I'm not sure if I see like, does he catch passes?
No, not at all.
Yeah, so we're just hoping for like hyper efficient.
But Eli Mitchell didn't really catch passes
either. No, you're right. You're right. Yeah, okay.
He caught like no passes at LSU. 379 carries, 28 receptions in 3 years at LSU.
Yeah, and I mean, he, you know, I think the we're expecting the offense to be better with Trey Lance is at least. Not everyone is, so I like them to score more points this year than with Jimmy G. Okay, wide receiver, you're up.
See, this one I am struggling with because I think there's a lot of different ways.
Let's stick to like a fourth round and after type player.
I will have two answers. Juju Smith-Schuster or Kadarius Toney.
I like those.
If Toney stays healthy for 17 games and Daniel Jones is like, it's not a nightmare. Like if it's a nightmare and Daniel Jones is hurt or sucking and Tyrod comes in or whatever, then it's not going to happen. But if the Giants, thing works, like if the Dable thing works, Toney seems to be my answer to like the guy who's going in the second round next year. But really to me.
Yeah, no, just like those 2 weeks or whatever, we saw him catching like 8 balls. He was fucking electric. So I'm in on both of those players. I'm going to go with, he's been steamed a lot, but I'm going to go with Mike Williams.
Yeah, I can't co-sign on this one. I've not been chasing this theme.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's if he has 5 25 point plus games, 30 point games, you're gonna want him. He is getting just like a tad expensive, especially for PPR, but I'll just go with Mike Williams as an expensive guy, and a cheaper guy. It's one of these two. I'm gonna go with like one of these, I guess I'll say either KJ Hamler or Curtis Samuel. I like both these guys as like cheap late round stabs that could Christian Kirk it, where you're like, wow, I got 170 points from
dude,
this like
Hamler. Like what if he is Tyler Lockett? What if KJ Hamler is Tyler Lockett here? You know?
Yeah. He's another guy where it's like, we don't know how the Broncos sort out right now. So why not? Just...
I think there's this assumption that he's just clearly four, right? He's yeah, clearly. Right. Yeah. And it's like, I don't know, maybe Judy subs out sometimes, maybe Sutton subs out sometimes. Maybe he's the third guy on the outside over Tim Patrick. You know, there's lots of ways that could play out.
Curtis Samuel burned me so much last year, but I don't know. 2 years ago, we saw that like 180 point season he had or something like that. I'm just chasing that and hope he doesn't get injured because I just think he's flat out good.
Maybe he was good like 4 years ago.
Two years ago. Not last year. 2 years ago, he was like, CMC went down, but he was like Deebo Samuel before Deebo. He got like 40 rushing attempts. Deebo got 59 last year, and he's got 4.2 speed. And I don't think Washington's going to be as bad as everyone thinks.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
I think they could compete for the playoffs.
No, Liam, no, they're not good, dude.
Well, here's my, so this is an article too, but here's my take on why I think they're, if we compare the pass game weapons for Carson Wentz this year and last year when he was quarterback 15, they are much better this year. Terry McLaurin is better than Michael Pittman. Curtis Samuel is better than whoever the hell was the third wide receiver.
Like 900 different guys.
Yeah. And then Jahan Dotson is better than, again, like the scrubs, like Paris Campbell, who barely even played for the Colts last year. And Logan Thomas, if he is healthy, is much better than Mo Alie-Cox / Jack Doyle. So I'm not plugged in on the O-lines 100%, but
I think it's bad. I think it's supposed to be bad.
And they don't have Jonathan Taylor, but that's my take about Washington versus like the Colts pass game weapons last year.
I just don't, how do you come back from being from Carson? Like,
I don't think he's a good real life quarterback, but I don't fucking care for fantasy points.
Yeah, no, that's true. I don't know. I can't. I would
book Washington as more wins than the Giants.
I mean, I think they're a better team. Yeah, but like offensively, I think the Giants could be more exciting because of their coaching staff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Washington coaching staff is not anything to write home about. But I don't know. I've been taken to Carson Wentz still, and he's kind of like Daniel Jones. He has a bit of a rushing upside too, like not a lot, but just enough.
Yeah.
Okay, tight end. I think it's me.
Only one answer for this question.
I mean, there's a ton of answers, honestly. Like, I think I'll give you your guy, who I'm guessing you'll say. And I'm gonna, you know, it's hard because the cost has changed so much. Like, Dalton Schultz was like 2 rounds cheaper earlier.
Yeah.
So I think I can't really say him anymore, but I'm gonna say, give me Gronk. He's gonna come back. He's gonna give us 15 to 20 points, and everyone's gonna be like, why the hell weren't we drafting him?
Yes.
Who do you have?
Albert O, baby.
Yeah, I've been the
Greg Dulcich selection by them is such a false flag operation to keep Albert O's draft cost low.
I'm gonna tweet
that right now because that's really
Albert
funny.
O, who had a 50-yard catch in practice the other day from Russell Wilson. Woo! Not many tight ends getting that. All right, how do you see the gun to your head right now? Broncos pass catchers 1 through 5,
including Judy, Sutton, Albert O, Patrick Hamler, but Patrick Hamler like are going to flip flop based on performance. So whoever's like, if Tim Patrick starts the year and is just like crazy, then I don't think we'll see Hamler. But if they're getting nothing from Patrick early on, then Hamler will play.
Do you think they could kind of be like the Chiefs where a bunch of guys do good, but no one separates? Or do you think there will be two?
I think it totally depends on if Judy is who we thought he was coming out of college. Like, Judy's been extremely underwhelming as a professional player, but he has also had close to the worst quarterbacking situation in the NFL. Like, Drew Lock, Teddy Bridgewater have been his quarterbacks. And I mean, I don't know. You kind of would have expected him to be good with Bridgewater, and he wasn't at all. You know, he was bad.
Week one, he actually, like, so I wasn't drafting any Judy last year because I was like, okay, I don't think Teddy Bridgewater's wideout's going to bury me here at this cost. But the week one, I remember being like, damn, that was a bad call. He's catching all these balls. And then he just had like a high ankle sprain or something. I think I leaned Sutton over Judy, but I really would not be shocked to see everyone having a pretty good season.
Kind of okay seasons, which makes Judy and Sutton terrible picks and makes Albert O and Tim Patrick and Hamler smashes.
I have way more of the three later guys than the, because, you know, because it's like,
well, that's just the nature of drafting.
Well,
it's just much easier to get cheaper guys than it is to get expensive guys.
Also, I'm kind of approaching the Broncos like, why lean, you know, I like to draft early for the uncertainty, but even if we get reports where it's like clearly Judy or clearly Sutton, they can't get more expensive than they really are. So why not just take the guys I'm more confident in at this stage? Someone like a, you know, Gabriel Davis, someone like a Juju Smith-Schuster, where it's like pretty confident they are the number twos in their respective offenses right there.
Right, yeah. Now. Yeah. I think that's facts. But Albert O is the guy.
Love it. That pick. Absolutely love that pick. All right.
He's an incoming smash.
18th round, just before we go, 18th round pick that you're trying to get that you could see being on the winning drafters team, or 20th round pick. Sorry.
Devin Duvernay and Tylan Wallace. Either or, it doesn't matter.
I'll go with like Hassan Haskins, you know, because I'm not taking a lot of Derrick Henry. So I gotta take someone on the team. So taking the Titans backup running back.
Yeah. That's interesting, right? Cause I think that could be true. The problem is last year they were playing three guys when Henry got hurt. They were playing McWeapon, Foreman, and Hilliard. And I don't, what assurances do we have we don't do that again?
None. My only guess is that like Haskins is closest to Derrick Henry in the sense where he's just kind of like really big and strong. And you know, you could always fool yourself into thinking, hey, it's the rookie. We've not, you know, like, Let's take these guys who could maybe not even make the team. I don't know, but like, I've not been taking and done it a ton of Derrick Henry, so I got to take. I'm not just trying to be out on the Titans running back, so I have to take someone from the team.
Yeah, I should probably start taking Haskins or Hilliard a little bit, because I've been taking Dalvin Cook over Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I literally have one auto drafted Derrick Henry team across like five sites.
Yeah.
Which, so I'm ready to be buried by that.
Yeah. I mean, we all know how that ends. All right, everyone, we're going to get out of here. Drafters Fantasy, promo code Davis, the link to sign up and all that stuff is going to be in the description here. And we'll be back next week.